Anglesey, Anglesey, treasure island, the Irish Sea, where the peaceful scenery welcomes you to Anglesey.
Croeso, and welcome to another edition of Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to have its medicine of history washed down with a spoonful of Wales. And if an apple a day keeps the doctor away, we ain't been eating our fruit, baby, because we got the doctor on again.
The good doctor.
The good doctor. Dr. Cymraeg Stephen Rule Stevie Baby. He's with us again.
Oh, my. I can't believe you just did that intro. Like, we've just been having a chat for 2 minutes before doing this, and then you come out with that unexpectedly.
How long
just
did that take
normal
to
about
say,
you
right?
doing that?
And from the start of me opening my mouth to finishing it, I've sweat so much because I was like, oh, what's he going to think of this?
You've got to start preparing me for this, gents.
Well, talking Come of preparation, on. We just found out this, as you'll see in the episode title, this is called Ynys Môn, which we thought the good doctor himself demanded. He said, I'm only coming on if I can discuss my true passion, Ynys Môn.
Okay, Frank, why did I think that as well? You can explain to the audience why I thought that at all. You know, the old doc, he's only coming on if we're doing Ynys Môn. He said he don't do anything else.
I don't know why, but in my mind, I thought... Stephen message saying, hey, yeah, of course, I'd have to come back on. Can we discuss on this morn? Just went through our direct messages. And I said to him, can you come on or can we discuss on this morn, please?
Lads, I had absolutely no idea. Like I said at the start, where, like, there's three of us here. None of us are from on this morn. It's a beautiful place. But, like, some people are going to be listening to it. You know, you've ruined my little joke here. I was going to come on and say that, you know, I was going to come on and say, yeah, I'm coming back on because we're doing something in North Wales. That I was going to pretend a minute before that you told me it was Anglesey, and I was going to be like, oh, come, like, just totally throw me off because it's the opposite end of Northern Wales to me. But so thanks for ruining my joke.
And
first,
I say
you
another
come out
thing
with an apple a day, and then you do this.
Anyway, thanks for coming on.
Yeah,
cheers,
I appreciate
you
not just hanging up as soon as you heard that. To be fair, Steve,
I'm literally like, hovering over the leave button, boys.
Yeah. Yeah, one more chance, and that's it. Almost then you're gone.
Yeah. Oh well, we do appreciate you coming back on, even if none of us really knew why we're doing on this morn. But it's an interesting place, and it's well worth a deep dive. So
it is.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second, anyway. But how have you been? How have you been? You've skyrocketed to even bigger fame since we last caught up, friend.
I don't know what's happened, gents. Mm. To be honest, I'm trying to sort of put it into words between now and since we did the last one, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it has gone a little bit more viral, I guess. I don't know if that's the correct term.
Yeah.
I'm sort of out
yeah,
of
you're going straight to strength, mate.
Yeah, there's a lot of people seem to be following it, and it honestly humbles me every day. I turn on the sort of on Instagram and Twitter and things and see there's a few more followers and people who've, you know, taken the time to say, I want to hear a little bit more from this idiot. And it really, really does mean a lot. And no, I've been talking about your podcast. I've been listening to the other episodes. I really do enjoy it. And to come and do something
I don't know, mate. I think the fame's getting to your head a bit because you bashed my really good intro there. And I was like, you're too good for that now,
mate,
are you?
If I had
too good
three
for apple
followers.
Jokes.
If I had three followers, I'd have bashed that joke.
Yeah,
no,
that's fair. Yeah. If anything, that's a testament to it. Yeah,
maybe that's right. But no, look, it's a great thing you do because I've always had an interest in history. And to be honest, I don't know whether I said this last time, but had I not read for Welsh in university, I'd have read for history because I just love it. And we've got such incredible history in Wales. And you know, I suppose I don't get to scratch that itch with what I'm doing. People like to hear new things and Gymraeg and hear about different phrases and etymologies and funny.
Oh, mate, I think the etymology side is like, I love it when you go into that sort of stuff. I don't know what it is about etymology.
A lot of people are saying that.
Super, super interesting to me.
A lot of people are saying that, and I do find it interesting to start. To be honest, the reason I didn't start off and go whole hog on it was because I thought it was just me who enjoyed it. And it turns out that people really like it. Yeah.
I think it scratches the itch of history. People who like history and like languages, the etymology side is big. But that's why, that is one of the reasons why maybe I suggested Ynys Môn, because I know you've got a passion for Welsh history, and sometimes you might get a bit, oh, come on and talk about the Welsh language. But I think this would be a nice chance to do a bit of both. We can discuss the cultural ties of Welsh language at Ynys Môn.
Definitely.
But also, yeah, get into a bit of the old history a bit.
Oh, yeah, we should say, are you doing anything the moment you want to push people to?
Am I allowed to?
Oh, of course.
I do. I've actually just released a book a couple of weeks ago called 88 Favourite Welsh Adjectives. And so thank you for letting me do this. But yeah, it's I've just chosen 88 random Welsh adjectives. And for each one, I go through an introduction about sort of how I learn the word and how it's used in language. I've got a bit of a thesaurus section. I go through the whole etymology back to sort of Proto-Indo-European. Oh, I've got example sentences and questions, show you how to use the comparatives and superlatives. So I've got that for every page. And I've tried to put a bit of Dr. Cymraeg humour in there as well. So you can find it on the website that shares its name with a river and a rainforest in Southern America. And 88 favourite Welsh adjectives. That means a lot to me that you've let me do that, guys.
We'll put this at the very start. So what we'll do, we'll edit this round and we'll put that at the very start to make sure everyone who's...
We'll link it on the old notes as well, mate.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll do a quick little editing. So that'll be the intro. Around there. It also took me far too long to realise you meant Amazon. I'm just too tired tonight. I was like, what? What an odd way to describe this place to find it. So in case there's anyone thick out there listening, you can find it on Amazon, but we'll put the links in the descriptions. So anything else coming up? Amdraw, is that still available?
I think you can still watch Amdraw. I'd rather people didn't, but you can still watch it.
I've got it downloaded on my Skybox.
I saw you on, what was the, it's the like Welsh sports thing, was it Pen and a Game,
yeah.
And when you were saying about, and I was like, man, I relate to this guy. I reckon I would relate to you anyway, when you said you met Ryan Reynolds, because obviously you were on Wrexham for a bit when I saw you on one of the episodes.
Yes, I haven't seen that episode, but a lot of people have sent me screenshots going, what are you doing in my living room? So,
I paused it, I pointed, and I said to my wife, I was like, that's Dr. Cymraeg, he's been on my podcast. And she was like, she didn't understand the significance, but I was like, right, you're done now. I'm gonna have to
Is no significance, guys. It's literally just...
But when you said on that, the Pen in a Game, you said you knew that Ryan Reynolds was a good looking boy, but when you saw him you were like, oh my god, I just can't believe how attractive he is. I know that I would be the same. I'd be doing googly eyes at him.
He was dreamy, boys.
I do think when you meet actual celebrities you realise, oh god, you're something else, aren't you, because they are just unbelievable.
You think, oh, it's the makeup, it's the lighting, it's all this sort of stuff, and then you look at them in person, you go, oh my, what a way to make me feel bad about myself.
You're just better
than
me.
I'm going to go home, look in the mirror and hate myself now.
That's exactly what I did, and I still do.
I was just going to bring up, because I saw you at the Eisteddfod, Steve. And,
yes.
It was, me and Franks were also at the Eisteddfod, and me and Franks have had a bit of a laugh at how, like, very differing our presences at that, like, prestigious event
are.
We just know it wasn't even like acceptable levels. We were fucking stumbling about, like way too many drinks. Yeah. And like, best laid plans and all that, you know, but we'd had way too many. And then I look at you and like, God, he's really doing a good service for Wales, this guy. And then I looked at us like, Jesus Christ, you can't even hold it together for one day, even a few hours.
We met pod listeners and stuff, and we were at the pub and it was so cheap to drink there.
It can happen quickly, can't it?
We didn't have a dinner.
To be honest, I think if there's anyone listening out there, you've kind of, through a roundabout way, indirect way, we'll say, really shown off the power of the Eisteddfod, because people think that it's probably something that's not massive. The fact that you were there at the same time as me and I had no clue, you'd have thought, oh, it must be a small event, they'll bump into it. I wouldn't have had it. To be honest, it's massive, isn't it?
Look,
I did a video there as well, and I may have had a couple of
beverages,
lemonades, But look, it is that. It's that and so much more, isn't it? It's a chance to come together, and it's just an amazing thing. And I think if anyone, not to try and plug it because I'm not working for this ever, but obviously it's in Wrexham next year, and
that'd be good.
You know, it's going to be amazing, mate, to have it in my home patch and where I was born and brought up. So, and it hasn't been there since 2011. So I think if anyone's listening, and like I say, it's not a plug, but you can get a lot out of it, whether you're a native or fluent Welsh speaker or otherwise.
We met when I said that. We couldn't believe that it was like, well, not couldn't believe. I know it's gearing to be, you know, more and more inclusive every year type thing, you know, but it's not this like stuffy Welsh thing.
No.
That, you know, it used to be, you know, in years gone by.
We started speaking to some Canadian guy, didn't we, who was just there with his friends. We had, we had a lot of listeners like ask us to really promote it because people were a bit worried about the parking and like some of the things like that, like trivial things.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, we're really worried about that. We're worried it's going to affect it. So they were like, just publicize the transport on the train. And from Cardiff, it was super easy. It was really like, but those trivial things can be the things that put you off it. It's like, oh, well, how am I going to park? How am I going to get kids from the car to the place? But I found it like, for us on the train, it was amazing. It was a really easy day out.
Coming down from yours on the bay,
public transport, that's what it was geared for. If you use public transport, it was incredible. I had to try and park because I was driving back that evening. And it was
I bet that was a nightmare.
Do you know what? In Pontypridd Rugby Club, they had all day there for a tenner, and I thought, well, mate, I'm in. And there was a lovely guy there. I had a chat and Gymraeg with him, and he was really cool. And I was lucky in that sense. But it was, other than literally, that would be my only gripe, I guess, about the whole estate. Other than that, it was the whole layout of it. It was so unique, and they did a really good job.
No, we had a great time. If anything, too good a time, as I said. So, you know, I think we've just illustrated that the duality of the Eisteddfod as well. You can go there for the culture. You can go there if you just want to get smashed as well, because that's exactly what we did. So,
And Wrexham will be no different.
Also, you come on this time as a redemption, because this time you're on with real alcohol, hardcore booze.
Hardcore.
To
be honest, it's worrying because I don't drink a great deal, boys, and I may well be smashed after this.
Oh, mate.
People may hear the deterioration.
Don't tempt us with a good time. I'm telling you.
You'll hear the deterioration in my answers and voice and everything as we go through this part.
Steve, mate, have you heard some of the bloody episodes we've done when we've done like doublers and triplers and things like that? Christ, so the amount of stuff we've had to seal away in the vault that are not fit for consumption. Because we've just gone, that's just bollocks.
It's hearing little things where I can clearly see that you're becoming intoxicated that are making me worried now, to be honest. So,
Well, to be fair, me and Jack are quite tired today because we've overdone it all weekend. So we're actually being sensible. We're having beers, of course, but we're not going our normal health and leather. We're not trying to fit in
We'll see by the end of the episode.
Have we advertised? Are they paying us or what? This Anglesey Mourn Distillery.
Oh, so that's your. So do you want to discuss what your drink is? Because it looked rather nice.
I was in. Here's another plug for somebody in Bodnant Welsh Foods, not far from Conwy, and I was just walking around. They do lovely local produce and stuff, and they do lovely local alcohol as well. So they obviously sell, you know, things like Wrexham Lager and, you know, anything Welsh, they'll stock it. And there was this tiny bottle of Anglesey Mourn Distillery whiskey, as it's written on there, with an I at the end.
Nice.
And I thought, do you know what? Let's give it a pop. And it's not bad. It's proper whiskey, you know what I mean? It's not like a liqueur or anything like that. They're going for it. Like, so I feel like we're already going to annoy the people of Ynysmore today, but just don't tell them that I'm drinking it with Diet Coke. Okay. But
that's exactly
if
how
anyone
we'd
wants
be
me
it.
To. Yeah. If anyone wants me to, I will have a swig of it now without it, but I don't, feel like it.
You're so keen for it already, mate. You're like, I've had a few. Yeah. Go on. I'll do a straight if you really want me to.
I'm going
to
do it. So if anyone wants to hear what it sounds like when Dr. Cymraeg has a swig of whiskey, I'm going to do it. Okay. So it was doing
exclusive.
Mate, this isn't going to go well at all.
Oh,
Oh my God. You know,
I'm going to be amping that up on the edit now for everyone.
Do you know when people say that'll put hairs on your chest? I actually feel like my hairs are growing on my chest right now.
That's so good.
Strips the inside of your throat
actually,
a little bit.
Do you know
yeah,
what? It's actually quite nice.
Ooh, dangerous then. Because if you can drink it straight,
it's dangerous
if
you do it straight. Yeah. We say that with Bar TV rum. That's the same thing. I can drink that straight, and it's very.
I probably could as well.
Off.
That's the problem.
It's beautiful.
Delicious.
That's actually quite nice. I would recommend it to you boys, and I think that they should pay us for the two or three minutes we've done.
Don't even start, mate. We've been on at Pendaren for God knows how long.
Yeah, give us a bottle, you bastards. Now, do you know that? We should probably keep that one quiet because they were in discussions to help us out with a few bottles.
stop bitching them out, I suppose. Yeah. All right, we'll cut it. Jesus Christ.
So what are you drinking though, Jack? If you're keeping a bit easy tonight, you're not going as hard as normal.
I mean, I'm not going hard, I say. I'm on the rum and cokes. but it's because I didn't want to go and get more beer. Yeah. And I just had, so I had the beer that was in my fridge, and now I'm on the rums because that's what's left. And I was like, I've actually got an absolute stack of beer right next to me now, but it's for the weekend because Steve, me and Franks are going a weekend away, not just a romantic one between us, we're taking our partners, and like a big group of us. So that's like they're looking at me in the face, but I haven't put it in the fridge on purpose because if it's cold, I knew I'd drink it. Yeah. So I've left that to the side. So yeah, just on the rims. How about you?
The tactics involved in that is incredible.
Mate, and I question sometimes, do I have a problem? And it's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. If it's cold, I'll drink it, he says, you know.
I'm on a skinny lager because I'm still trying to be a bit healthy. So I'm still having alcohol.
You said that was quite good, didn't you?
Yeah, man, it's tasty, it's decent, and it's only, it's way less calories, but it's just trying to be healthy, right? If I don't feel so embarrassed about trying to be healthy.
Know, yeah. Oh, the old skinny drinks, is it?
Look at this guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the pleasantries done. Should we deep dive into
pleasant.
As pleasant as it gets, mate.
Oh, that's
as pleasant
enough. As it gets. It's downhill from here, gentlemen. Yeah.
Well, we're going to discuss, the doctor's favourite topic, Ynys Môn, as he's got tattooed all over him.
Literally won't talk about anything besides Ynys Môn, yeah, again.
He's going to pivot all your social media channels to an Ynys Môn appreciation. So, Ynys Môn, or in Old Norse Anglesey, or in Roman times known as Mona. And yeah. I might not be pronounced that 100% correct, but yeah, so it's known by different names. Often people think Anglesey is like an English name for it, but it's not. It's an Old Norse name. And for those who don't know, Ynys Môn is an island at the top of Wales. So it's if you think of Wales as the head of a pig, it's like the flappy ear at the top, which is how I always look at a map of Wales.
No one else looks at it that way.
I was just about to say, what an absolutely mad way to look at our beautiful country.
I promise you, Wales looks like a pig's head. Wales pig's head. That's good.
You just can't. Anything pig heart boy, pig head country, you guys can't help
Google
yourself.
It right now and the first one that comes Googling. Up it'll be I'm gonna make this the cover art for today's episode.
Don't believe him, listeners. He's gonna use AI to like fucking trick you into changing the shape.
Well, fine, ignore my pig's head comparison.
It's in the top left, right?
It's top left, and it's the 50th biggest island in Europe. It's not to be sniffed at, Old Ynys Môn.
Seventh biggest in Britain. That's what I have in my notes. Yeah.
For centuries, though, it's been home to hunters, farmers, warriors, kings, and they've all left their mark and trove of ancient stones, burial chambers, forts, and castles, providing strong evidence of the island's importance throughout the ages. And I mentioned it gets its English name in quotations. Like I said there, it was from seafaring Vikings who named it in English rather than the Saxons. So I know a lot of people used to be like, oh, why are you using the English name for it, not the Welsh name? And you can be really like annoying and say, well, actually, it's the Old Norse name, just to be like a pedant.
I love being petty like that, though. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about its kind of war around there. So we're all going to pick a different aspect to talk about. But the one I'm going to focus on is how much this place has been invaded. And now from doing this pod, like, we've learned so much around how much of Wales has had a battle anywhere near it. So, like, you can go the internal Welsh battles in the west, or Norman invasions in the south, or Saxon invasions in the north, or all over the shop, Wales has had its battles. But due to its strategic location, it's probably had more than its average fair share of battles, especially for a relatively small island. Mm. It's had Romans, English, Normans, Vikings, and of course the Welsh, who've all come to fight, invade, or defend it at one stage or another. So that's like 2,000 years of just fights there. And we covered in the Battle of Moyle Don, which is like a really mad, insane episode.
It's a great
and
fight,
battle.
That one.
Yeah, it's Edward Longshanks against Llywelyn ein Llyw-Olaf in 1282. It's known as the Battle of the Bridge of Boats, and the English tied together all their boats in one big, like, spontoon, is it called? Flotilla, like a giant, like a bridge. And they decided to put all their horses and cavalry on there to invade Ynysmon from the mainland. And yeah, there was a calamitous effect. So we got an episode on there. It's episode 4. So the episode's a bit shonky and the poor audio, but it's a really interesting one, if you do ask me.
Yeah, it is a good one. It's a mad one where you think, why would someone make a strategic decision like that? But it's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also like, yeah, there's a lot of support of like how druids and stuff are really important to that battle, and like as the religious aspect, which I'll come to in a bit. It's also the Battle of Anglesey Sound, which took place after the Normans had briefly taken charge of the battle, and it was fought between Magnus Barefoot, King of Norway, and the Anglo-Norman Earls Hugh of Montgomery and Hugh de Avranches. And it took place as part of Magnus Barefoot's expedition to the Irish Sea. So like, it's not even just the Welsh who've had fights on this place, it's had fights from international people. But more dramatically, it was probably the Romans who turned all their consuming, conquering eye to Ynysmon. And around 60 to 61 AD, Ynysmon's shores were invaded by the Romans. And up until then, Ynysmon had become like the last central hub of resistance against this prolific Roman army. And like I said, in Latin, it's known as Mona. The island was targeted by the Roman general Suetonius Paulinus due to its giant druid population and the fact it became this harbour for rebels. So once the Romans are pushed further and further into Britain and Wales, loads of people ended up on Ynysmon as this kind of safe refuge. As we said on this pod before, druids were like a sort of priests of ancient Britain and Ireland, and they were really important religious figures.
I read something interesting the other day that, you know, like we always go on about on the pod about how like a lot of Welsh history gets lost because people didn't write stuff down, especially like Celts, like when you go back that far. And I was reading that it wasn't that Celts didn't or couldn't write or anything like that. It was only druids that would write things down. And they felt that being able to read and write and like note these things down was like a privilege, and you could only do it if you trained to be a druid. So they actually actively kept it from the general population.
And they were massively into as well sort of the idea of if something's worth knowing, remember it. Like, you know, we are so used to in our modern way of having ways of writing that I'm looking at my desk right now, and I've even got notes in front of me, things I've like raised in this day, but I'm like,
just about to say, we've all got notes tonight, haven't we? For example,
no, but that's big time, Where's Anglesey again? But like, these people thought that if something was worth knowing, you would train yourself to learn it, and that was, you know, that was one of the things when, I don't want to ruin your story, guys, but obviously when the druids perhaps hashtag succumbed, that's why so much was lost with them, because they were so intent on the idea that this ancient knowledge was only deserving of being in the mind of the person.
Yeah, these were the Celtic encyclopedias for everyone.
Pretty much, yeah.
And yeah. It was a weird sort of, when I first read that, I was like, oh, that makes way more sense than just, we don't give a shit, we won't write it down.
Exactly.
Like that. It's much more like they have a reverence for the knowledge rather than sort of we'll just write anything down and disseminate it to everybody.
Well, that's kind of my next point was going to be that often, so we don't know a huge amount about druids because a lot of it is lost, but we often know what was written down from the conquerors. So, you know, like they say that the conquerors write the history books. And when they do that, they often paint those they conquered as savages. So they kind of portray the Celts as being, like you said, like illiterate, no interest in reading or writing. But like you said, there are other reasons. It's more because it's a a privilege or a memory-based thing, or it's a communal oral tradition. But what we do know is that the Druids had this stronghold around Llyn Cerrig Bach between Rosneger and Valley on Ynys Môn. An account by the Roman historian Tacitus, who we've spoken about a lot, who did a lot of the recording of the invasion of Wales, he tells of this crushing of a Druid stronghold on Ynys Môn by a Roman army, which some believe was motivated not only by part by wanting to crush the natives, but also around this information that there's apparently a lot of copper mines on Anglesey. And the Romans knew that that would be a really strong help for their economy. So Tacitus wrote, he prepared accordingly to the attack of Island of Mona, which had considerable population of its own, while serving as a haven for refugees, and in the view of the shallow and variable channel, constructed a flotilla of boats with flat bottoms. The text described how Paulinus' soldiers, they invaded Anglesey shores by fording or in deeper waters by swimming next to their horse. And the Romans faced like strong tides and rocky sections to reach the island. But when they did, no one's exactly sure where it was. There's some discussions about where exactly where they landed. But either way, so the etymology of the island sometimes might explain where they landed. There's a place called Maeshirgard, which is like an area of long battle, or Cae Oerwaedd. Like field of cold or bitter lamentation. So somewhere to lament. So these kind of areas often kind of attributed to these. And there's like a prop, Henry Rowlands, who's like this 18th century historian, identified like a Roman ford near these airfields. And they kind of assume it's roughly there. But that's by the by. Tacitus described the battle and he did something which they don't normally do, which I'll come to in a second, but he describes that the Druids were all stood on this beach holding torches in robes of, this is a quotation now, in robes of deathly black with dishevelled hair, describing what greeted the Roman army. He said, on the shore stood the opposing army with its dense array of armoured warriors. Between them, the ranks dashed these women with black attire like the Furies, with hair dishevelled, waving brands. So the women were fighting among the armoured warriors, and then they had these Druids on the beach themselves. All the Druids lifted their hands to heaven and pouring forth dreadful imprecations. And apparently this scared our soldiers by the unfamiliar sight so that, as if their limbs were paralysed, they stood motionless and they exposed their wounds. And what's really significant about this is Romans hardly ever wrote down that their soldiers got scared. Like it's the Romans were the hard bastards, well-trained, weren't trained to be feared, or weren't trained to know fear. They were trained to be feared. So it was like this massive testament to just how intimidating this would have been to have all these women dashing between the ranks and these soldiers armed up and then these Druids.
Yeah, like, it's a pretty metal description, isn't it, of like how cool they that's a very visually striking kind of image.
I mean, if they went as far as saying stuff like that, you know, and you know that history is written by the victors, you know these guys were, and you can imagine the Carinx, is that how you pronounce it? That big, tall horn.
Yeah, that terrifying.
Oh, the Carinx, yeah.
You know, you're gonna be nervous, scary, aren't you? Oh my God, yeah. I think there should be a petition, right, that before every Wales game, rugby or football or whatever.
It'd be class.
Mate, imagine coming out on the pitch with one of them.
Oh yeah,
we'll try and drop that off. I was about to say we'll link we'll link it as well. There's a thing that, and you've probably seen it as well, Steve. I'd be surprised if you hadn't. There's like that. It did the rounds, especially like if your algorithm is geared to send in Wales. Yeah, that's it. And it sounds incredible. And like the caption is, imagine being like a Roman soldier in the middle of like a Welsh rainforest back in the day, and you just start hearing that.
I don't want to think of that.
Yeah, it's so scary. And the way it sounds is class. I absolutely back you on that, playing that at every sports game.
Mate, that'd be amazing. And just while we're on the Romans, before I forget, now this is only a theory that I've heard, right? But it is quite interesting that if you've ever been to Llandudno, if you look out on a nice clear day, you can see the Isle of Man. And obviously in Manx Gaelic, the name for the Isle of Man is Ellen Vanin or just Manin. So obviously Man sounds a lot like Morn. And there's a theory that I've heard that the Romans who first saw them, when they glanced upon one of them and then went away and then went somewhere else in Wales and then saw the other one, they believed it was the same island. They called them both Mona. And it just so happened that in Welsh we kept it as Morn.
Oh, yeah.
And then in Manx it went to well, manaw in Welsh and then man in Manx Gaelic. So that's potentially a theory why the Isle of Man and Ynys Môn have a very similar sounding name.
I love that.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Although this was a scary sight, the Romans did what the Romans did, though, and massacred, and they killed the entire population, pretty much. It was really violent. It was catastrophic for the ancient Britons. But it did. Apparently, they sadly obliterated the Druids, nearly all of them, the warriors, the women, the men, the children, pretty much everyone who was there lost their lives. And this violent massacre was like catastrophic for the ancient Britons, because like we said before, they're the history keepers, they're the knowledge keepers, they're the people who keep the culture going in terms of passing it down in oral tradition. But what it did do was part, it boosted the anger felt by the remaining ancient Britons, and we have that anger was felt by like the warrior queen Boadicea, and her army's quest for revenge was like exemplified, and it brought in more people because these were like holy people. The Druids were so important, and to have so many of them massacred, it like really bolstered their anger. And we've done a whole episode on her, so I don't want to go over too much what we discussed, but these murderous actions of the Romans to the people of Britain led Boadicea to amass an army of around 100,000 people. I've written down here men, but it's not men.
Didn't Paulinus, the guy you said who invaded, he had to pull out of Anglesey, well, didn't he, the Ordovices, because of the massing army with the Iceni or something, wasn't it?
So that was it, yeah. So whilst he was preoccupied with fighting the Druids, this was when Boadicea had a bigger chance to attack. So whilst he was up in North Wales, she led the armies in London and stuff like that. The Queen, she ransacked the Romans' new major commercial trading hub in Londinium, now known as London, and Verulamium, which is St. Albans, or Albans. So then the Roman army attempted to fight back. The Romans were forced to abandon the city, and like they all got slaughtered by Boadicea. And I think we discussed in that episode how like fucked off she was and how violent she was in retaliation. But yeah, it was just Anglesey played a big part in allowing Boadicea to do that. But in doing so, also we lost a huge part of ancient British history.
You can imagine it's sort of like, in a way, I don't know whether this was treated like that, but perhaps Ynys Môn was kind of like a bit of a pilgrimage spot, really, a real safe haven for the culture.
Definitely.
That, you look at the Vatican now for Catholics and things like that. If there are Catholics all over the world, billion of them perhaps, but if something happened to the Vatican, you're missing a billion people around
that's
the
really
planet.
Good point. Yeah.
And sort of, something like that really would, enrage people.
Definitely. It'd definitely galvanize like anti-Roman sentiment, wouldn't it? And everyone would be thinking, Christ, because it's such a sacred place to all the ancient
Britons. That would be perhaps, maybe not so much the straw that broke the camel's back, but be definitely a factor in saying, well, look, there you go. There's your last straw. Let's go.
You'd have a lot of young Celts willing to pick up a sword then, wouldn't you? Definitely.
I think so.
So that was my part. That was just my bit of Ynys Môn, just because we all love Ynys Môn so deeply. I don't want to talk too much more about it. I'll share someone else's.
It's the only real reason we started the pod, really, just to finally get to the Ynys Môn
bit. We've been talking about this for months, just literally just loving on Ynys Môn and
So yeah, I will pass over now to Steve, the good doctor. I can't help but call you the good doctor. It always makes me laugh.
I'm a good guy.
You are
take
a good
it.
Guy. Yeah. You're going to discuss some of the etymology, are you? What do you want to tell us? What you do?
Well, I've got. To be honest, being a history podcast, I thought I'd go a bit sort of talking about the bits of Ynys Môn's history that really interest me, and then I've got a bit. I've got one term here that I can't help but link back to my homeland in Flintshire. So I'll get to that in a second, but. No, my interest, I suppose, I don't really do enough of this on Dr. Cymraeg, really, just because I'm sort of interested in just promotion of the Welsh language, really. But I love Ynys Môn just for the fact that there are so many ancient burial chambers there. And I think it's probably most poignant to start off with one that's called Bryn yr Hen Bobl, which translates as the Hill of the Old People. And the connotations for me that I suppose I read about it and then it sort of hit me later. And I believe some guy wrote about it. So I forget now. It's awful of me. I'll have to let you know and you can put it in the podcast notes. Yeah. he wrote, and it sort of hit me that, like, obviously the time of building these ancient burial chambers and these ancient stone circles and the, you know, Celtic, pre-Celtic perhaps, building these monuments, when the Welsh language came and developed, it was the Welsh who called it Bryn yr Hen Bobl. And the idea, but the notion behind that is that we knew it belonged to an older time, but we don't know them. And it sort of really exacerbates and really makes obvious the fact that the link between the people who built these sites and us now, at some point that link was lost. So let's just say somebody 5,000 years ago built this site, buried their dead, maybe used it continuously for hundreds of years. And then those people kept going back there, worshipping and remembering their dead and respecting their dead and things like that. And then at some point it stopped and nobody passed on what it was and how they used it.
Or couldn't because of what was going on, you know, potentially, in terms of war or whatever. Yeah,
it's a
testament to how long ago it was.
Oh my word. Yeah. We're talking 50 centuries perhaps, and 40, 50 centuries. Mm. And the closest we could get in modern times was to say, we recognize this place. It deserves a name. But we can only call it Bryn yr Hen Bobl. We can only refer to it as this place of a people who we didn't have a good enough connection with to tell us what it was for. And it really, just in that simple name for a site, really shows the connection that we lost, really. And that's kind of heartbreaking in itself, because we're still looking at these mysteries, but they're just finding out the altar stone in Corda Cowrie in Stonehenge is Scottish. You know, we're still finding things out 4,000, 4,500 years later. And who knows what else we'll find out. And the fact that it's taken us so long to learn this sort of stuff, we may never get to the crux of it. And it just...
We might never get those connections back, isn't it? Yeah,
that's exactly my point, really. What were you going to say about Stonehenge, man? Sorry.
Just going to say that we have an author who came on last week, Russ Williams. He's written a book called Where the Folk, where it tours around Wales, and he looks into all these like historical points, and he's done like a roadmap, and it's going to be released probably when this episode comes out. The book will be published, but he discusses how when he was getting his fact checker from, like, he's been published by I think it's South Wales University, but they were saying, like, he just finished all the book, signed it all off, had a beer to like celebrate it all being properly ready with the publishers, and then that day the news broke that Stonehenge isn't actually isn't from Wales, and in the book he just said, "Oh, this is where the stone from the inner circle."
He's had a bunch of academics like give the thumbs up and say, "Yeah, this is completely sound." And then it was like, "Well, tomorrow it isn't because they found something new, you know, new evidence."
To be
and it
fair,
was like,
"Ah, shit." Blue stones are still Preseli, and you know, there's no doubt in that. But I do find that a little bit harsh, actually. That's what it's there for, isn't it? We have to keep questioning, we have to keep changing our view on via observation. It's a science, really. You know, we have to keep molding, and whether that takes a day or it takes 100 years, you know, we have to accept that we're going to find new things out, I guess. And it doesn't 100%, as it doesn't is. Illegitimize what you've said, but it's definitely a moment in time. It's part of history itself, of what we thought at that moment, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shit art thing to say right there.
Thanks very much,
even if you get it, even if you get it wrong, that's part of the history of discovery. That's perfect. That is.
We say that about Hweddles and you know, mythology. Even it's not necessarily true, but it's true. People believed it. And it's true. Those stories happened. That we told those stories around fires. So yes, it's not necessarily real history. It's still a part of our history. And I think sorry, I did interrupt you there, though, mate. No.
You're exactly spot on, mate. Yeah, no, and that's the point, you know. I sort of liken it in a sort of sillily, sort of anecdotal way. Like, sort of, I've got a few tattoos, and I like them all, thankfully. But at some point, I may look at one going, oh, maybe I wish I didn't have that. But at the point in my life when I said, do you know what, I'm willing to bear the pain of having this. That, you know, that was a point in my life that I said, I want this, and that's something to be to be proud of. I think, you know, and it's the same sort of notion, really, that, that you know, at that moment in time, this is how we saw the world.
Yeah.
Mate, I've been saying about my tattoos, like, pretty much since I had them, I think. That's because I've got two absolutely dog shit tattoos. So.
Me and Jack both have a few shit ones, but Jack's got one that is so bad. It's outrageous. Yeah. It looks like it was... So we call him the Mother of Dragons because he's got two tattoos of dragons on him, but they are pretty bad. One's decent.
I need to
see
this
one. A Welsh dragon. I just didn't look after it very well, so it's like a dragon with like the plague or something. It doesn't look very good. The other thing was like something I drew when I was like 16, and I didn't have the nous at the time to think, right, if a guy's gonna break the law and give me a tattoo at 16, maybe he's not the best tattooist in the world. And it's just fucking dog shit.
I got my tattoo at 16 above a chip shop in Chippy Lane. And it was it's the quality you'd expect from someone above Chippy Lane, but you know, it was still a fun time at the time. I regret nothing. It's history.
As
it's
the doctor just said, it was a well part said. Of your history at the time, it wasn't is. It? Yeah.
Well said. No, but I mean, to get back to Ernest Moore and the place that us three love, really. I don't dislike it, boys.
No, I know. It makes it sound like we dislike it now, but it's just a really odd choice that we all...
At some point, someone is going to bring up Morchmorn and leave it at that, isn't it? You know, that's the... No, I do. It's an amazing place. I was there quite recently, actually, to see Trevignath, which is another burial chamber, and I recently had the genuine pleasure of visiting Barclodia de Gaures, which is, it's a modern abomination, really, that they've built over it. They've tried to make a sort of modern representation of what it would have looked like, and is it 1950s, 1960s? But Rhys Moyn was there, who used to be in a band, but he's a radio DJ, but he's also massively into his history. I met him there, and it's one of those places that it's under lock and key, and the only story I've heard is that there's a local shop, and if you go there and you say gair goriad os gwelwch yn dda, you know, give us the key sort of thing, they'll sort you out with the key and you can go in, because it's just, I see why they locked it down, because when I went in there are these markings on these stones that you'll only find in Ireland, really. They're so unique, and the fact that it was probably done by Irish people, or especially an Irish influence of some sort.
Yeah.
And these dress stones with circles and zigzags, and they're absolutely beautiful. So I got, for the first time a few months ago now, I got to go and see that, and it was a really special moment for me because I love this sort of stuff so much. So obviously you've got Barclodia de Gaures, and...
Do you know what that word means in English? Because it's quite strong.
Barclodia... It is. I mean, I'd probably say fed dog these days. It's like an apron. Barclodiad is
a description
of an apron.
I didn't know what Barclodiad was.
Barclod,
I don't know what fed dog is. But...
I think the fact that they've turned it into the sort of nominative Barclodiad, it sort of means sort of an apron was full of something, and then a gaures is the giantess. And... I didn't realize that when I read about it, it was, but basically the story is there was a giantess and she was carrying a bunch of stones in her fed dog, in her apron. And when she couldn't go any further, she dropped them, hence the pile of stones, because they couldn't, you know, Bryn and Hay and Bobble. We didn't know what the hell they were for. So we just sort of made up these stories, you know? And I mean, you go to the Roll Wright stones in England, things like that. It's men who were turned to stone for dancing on the Sabbath, you know, these places you must not go, and that sort of stuff. And because they don't want to reinvigorate this sort of this druidic Celtic sort of power, really, that was the worry. I found that there was a Barclodia de Gaures, which is actually just a simple stone circle, not far from Talavan in Conwy, not actually far from Minor Barth, which is another burial chamber on the Roman road. I thought they were the only two. And I did some research recently into a place just close to where I live now. And the further east you go in Wales, the less of these stone circles, stone monuments you'll find, because there was less stone about, and trees were so were in there were a lot more trees in the
dense
east
forest
of Wales
back in the day. Yeah, it's hard to remember that, so as well, isn't it? It was rainforest almost,
massively,
you know, in a lot of Wales.
So we over here, we decided to build a lot more with perishable wood, whereas the stone lasted. So we don't have that many monuments, but I did find that there was a story from about 200 years ago of people saying there was one, literally just, I'm looking out my window now, I can see where it is. It was called the Giantess's Apronful. It wasn't written as Bad Clodded a Gowres, but I'm claiming there's a third one. I digress. Back to Ynys Môn, but all these old sites, I mean, you've got Bryn Celli Ddu with the sort of the solar alignments, and even really, really simple things like Bodoir, which actually just looks like a little mushroom. It's just so, because we don't know anything, I could literally say to you now, these sites were a circus, and you'd have a jester, and they would throw things, and they'd jump through hoops, and they'd set things on fire, and you could 99.9% tell me that is wrong, but you can't 100% tell me it's wrong. And that's the beauty of these sites, because you can literally just come up with anything and go, I actually reckon it was used for this. And you know, we are 99% sure they were used for burials, but who knows whatever else there was. You know, we bury people in churches. We also have festivals in churches. We also have weddings in churches. You know, you could have a church down the road from you, and in 1,000 years, people go, oh, this was a place where they buried people. Yes, but it was also a place where we did singing. We also had...
There's so much that can't be, that cannot possibly be marked 1,000 years later, 2,000 years later, you know?
You look at this and you find a church that is regularly in use now, 1,000 years in the future, and there it's literally it's in line with the setting and the rising of the sun. There's Jesus Christ, who is the Son of God. There's people buried here, and why wouldn't people think, oh my God, 1,000 years ago they were worshiping a sun god? Why would they not think that? And as well, you know, you could go to there and there could be people buried there over a period of 1,000 years. You find one of them and say, right, it was definitely built at this time. If you don't find the one that was buried there 1,000 years later, you don't know that the site was in continual use for that. We just don't know so much about them. But that's where Ynys Môn grabs my heart, really. Yeah. A beautiful place, but it's those sites that I just absolutely love. And I would tell anybody, if you ever get the chance to go to Ynys Môn, these sites you can stop off, they're everywhere. Just find them and go and have a look, because they are just
I got this,
incredible.
I say this a few times on the pod, but I genuinely, I love history so much, and I think Wales is so blessed. I mean, everywhere's so blessed to have a long history of it, but because we have these things you can go see so easily in Wales, and it's a bit hippie, but I love putting my hand on something like these stone monuments.
Oh, 100%, mate.
And they've done it 2,000 years ago, and you're touching someone's hand from the past. Yeah. And I think that's so cool. And so, like, we were here for a snapshot. Yeah, a connection from 2,000 years ago. Like, I've been alive 30 years, and I feel that's taken forever. Like, there's been so many of my past generations to be 2,000 years ago and all that stuff. And it was such a blip of time. And I just find, that thing grounds me and centers me.
Me and Franks went to go see Llewellyn's Cave, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that was probably
the most visceral feeling I ever had of, like, fuck, this is... Oh,
it's spiritual in a way. Yeah, you know what? I'm not a spiritual guy, guys, right? And that saddens me in a way, because I think it's beautiful. The thing is, I went to the madly called Druid Circle, Meini Hirion in Welsh. I mean, this predates Druids, but the English called it the Druid Circle. But Meini Hirion, the Longstones, and in Penmae Mawr. And do you know what? I go up there at least once a year, and I sit there. Now, I don't think about rituals. I don't think about all this sort of stuff, but it does make me feel something. I feel different when I go there. I'm not saying I get this epiphany or I feel like I'm possessed or anything. I feel content and happy. And what is spirituality if not that?
Yeah, well, definitely.
You know, like when I read about Celts and stuff, and they were so tied to the land, do you know what I mean? Like, they really felt that, like, their existence was, you know, their gods, if you like, are all to do with nature, aren't they? They're to do with the sun, they're to do with trees, the water. You know, water was a huge deal to them. And, like, I'm not saying it's that level of stuff, but like you can sort of begin to understand of going, oh, is this what they felt, you know, a little bit like when we were just in some bloody dingy cave in mid Wales somewhere. But I was like, oh my god, what happened here? It means something to me, and that is real.
And we're lucky.
Is that what they felt in a particular forest, 100%. In somewhere in Anglesey, in a burial ground, whatever? And you could sort of begin to understand.
But we're lucky
maybe
in Wales.
Where this reverence came from.
You can go nearly anywhere here and find something of historical note, and you can experience it. So I do think we're always advocates of just going out there and doing things. And Wales has that. No matter where you're from in Wales, you're going to have a litany of things to do. We all sound like we've been smoking weed.
It's
whiskey, man. I promise. Unless Ernest Morn have put sort of laced this whiskey with something, who knows?
Right.
But no, can you imagine
druid behaviour?
Oh, yeah. It's bonkers. But no, but like you think, even things like a little spring in the side of a hill of water. You know, can you imagine 4,000 years ago? Right, the one thing that keeps you alive, the one thing your body needs. This mountain is producing it. You don't know that it's coming from rain and condensation and all this sort of stuff, right? Oh, yeah. I have just found a hole in a hill.
Yeah.
And the thing that I need to survive is coming out of it. Why would you not think that is
like divine or something? Yeah. You wouldn't just go, that's a classic groundwater source, that is. You're never going to think that back in the day.
You drink the water that's in a lake and you get ill. Yeah. All of a sudden you drink the water out of this spring and you're happy, you're fine, you're healthy. And why would you not think?
You can sort of scoff a bit, can't you? You can scoff a bit and say, oh, why do they believe gods of the mountains or that stuff?
And you what can else be a would little you believe?
Bit, yeah, I mean, yeah. When I actually hadn't thought of it ever like that, but that's a really...
Well, how many saints as well have, like... I noticed there's a pattern, especially in Wales, where it's like... Yeah. That their miracles, they had a spring that healed people, spring. And what it is probably just a normal spring. And they went, oh, this is actually clean water for a fucking change. Instead
exactly
of drinking like blue green algae from the lake, you know?
Yeah.
And they go, it heals. Yeah.
It doesn't heal. It just doesn't make you sick.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Santa's doing like Anglesey whiskey, hasn't she?
a lot of saints
have those bad boys. They just co-opt in every bloody clean spring and going, yeah, it's a miracle. Yeah. Have a drink from this.
I'll take that one.
Yeah.
Get your own spring. I'll have this one.
Oh, we'll find a Tales for Wales spring for sure. We'll muscle in on one. But I bet you'd be like,
we'll have to. We'll have one. We'll find one. What we'll do is we'll just steal someone's water source from their house.
Yeah.
And we'll just put a pipe coming out of a little modest hill somewhere.
We'd end up picking one that was like connected to a Dŵr Cymru pipe or something like that, and they just all get dysentery and die. And like, oh, nice one, Pod's gonna tank now.
Be like in The Simpsons where like they hit like a gas pipe and then everyone starts hallucinating down nothing. Maudland.
The old moral dilemma then. Oh, do we keep it going? Yeah.
Just don't invite me on the pod if we're doing this, okay? I'll help you, but I'm not coming back on.
So I'm going to have the message from you going, delete all the episodes I was on. I cannot be associated with this.
I got some stuff on inventions. Oh no, Jack, you haven't got any. Have you finished with your?
I've done my spiritual journey, boys.
Mate, every drink of that bloody whiskey you've had with an eye
that's
at the end.
That's what it is.
You've gone deeper and deeper in you. Yeah,
it did. You cut me off now because I still haven't finished the drink yet. So,
did you have some of the etymology, Jack, that you wanted to cover?
Not so much Ernest Morn, just more like over the years, how the different names have changed for Ernest Morn. So you touched on where it is before. I am remiss to bloody repeat what you said about it being the pig's ear of the pig's face that is Wales. But it is in the top left bit of Wales, if you like. Did you know there's actually...
We're telling people this 52 minutes in.
I know, yeah.
Just to make sure you know where it is, guys, if you're still listening.
Yeah. But I wanted to say that, do you guys know there's actually a smaller island just to the west of the main landmass called Ynys Gubby? Or Holy Island in English.
Mm.
It gets its English name from the fact that Holy Island, as Steve's mentioned, a lot of standing stones, burial mounds from the Iron Age and before. And this lines up with the fact, actually, that Anglesey was home to the Druids, etc., like we've said before, from the Celtic times. The Welsh name, Enniscubby, was given to the little island in honour of Saint Cubby, who was a 6th century Cornish bishop, who was an heir to the Cornish throne.
No.
But he actually rejected his calling as heir and decided to preach Christianity up and down the country, founding churches up and down Wales, mainly in, well there's a couple of them over the border, but mainly in Wales. But yeah, as my little bit's going to be about, it's on the names of Anglesey or Ynysmon, as we've said. Franks, you touched on this earlier. Anglesey is actually derived from the Old Norse name for the island, which is Anglesey, which actually translates to Hook Island in Old Norse. This is what Viking raiders called it as early as the 10th century, which was then adopted by the Normans, and then that carried on then through the English and to modern day. The modern day Welsh name, Ynysmon, comes from the original Brythonic name, meaning Island of the Cow, apparently.
Not a pig.
Not a pig.
Island of the Cow. If you look at the chat, I've just put a link in there to where someone's put a picture of a pig's head on top of Wales, and it is perfect.
All right. Well, and that's from the internet, so it must be true.
Oh, 100%.
Let me have a look at this chat. Hang on.
I'm still going to check. I'm going to check it out. What the hell? You've ruined Wales.
Oh, I just seen someone said, now you mention it, it can't be unseen. I always thought Wales looked like a pig head.
Oh, why have you done that? That's, I mean, kind of, maybe.
It does.
I tell you what, if for those listening, if a pig had like a unicorn's horn, it'd be pretty much spot on, wouldn't it?
But they don't, so
it's not, yeah.
It also exactly. Looks like a man with a hat on pointing somewhere.
I would agree with that.
And it's more of the man.
Steve, I love that. Listen, that is spot on. I've been thinking that for years.
I need anything to get this pig thing out of my
head. Get the pig thing out of my mind, yeah.
I just feel like there's going to be a bunch of Tories listening to this who are going to love this.
Oh, well, they're just a pig island anyway, aren't they?
Well, yeah, if that's there what are, turn off. We don't want your kind around here, okay? So I've
got those little rituals you guys do in eating and things like that. We don't need that.
Yeah, well, they've been fucking Wales for long enough,
mate. So. I was just about to say that. That was
I try my best to keep politics out of Dr. Kamai. Don't ruin this for me, boys.
I know. We'll keep this.
And you, fucking hell. Do you know, I do co-host this pod with you. I know. Yeah, no.
I won't get political. I won't get political. But
it's only taken us 54 minutes.
Yeah. No, we won't. I know you've got an actual career. We won't get political. We won't get scandalous.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin your stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks,
anyway. Go on, Steve. Say last bit. Go on. You're going to shag out the Tories now.
I was just going to thank you for not ruining my career. If you guys want to chuck yourself, you guys want to take pipes from people's houses and give people dysentery, you do you. I am nothing to do with any of it.
Fair, yeah. Keep your hands clean, mate. Yeah. That's what I can suggest. So, sorry. Anyway, we'll go back. We'll right the ship. Where was I? Yeah, modern Welsh name, Ynysmon, blah, 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 Brythonic name, Island of the Cow. Romans referred to it as Mona in Latin. Sats called it Monet after, or Mones, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, after the Romans left. Momens? The Romans? Christ almighty, I've had too many.
The Momens.
Momens. The Moomins. Yeah. what a callback. Anyway, it also has a very old Welsh name called Ynys Dywyll, which means Dark Isle in English. And that name is thought to have come from way back when, in Celtic times, when it was full of like ancient druid groves. So it was, just a very darkened isle, if you like.
Wow.
It was also called Ynys y Cedairn, or Isle of the Brave. Because, yes,
that was actually referred to the whole of Britain at one point as well, I believe. And it's Cadan.
Yes, it was. Yeah, because we were such hard bastards back in the day.
Pretty much.
But yeah, Cadan, the reason it was called Cedairn, sorry, I don't know.
Early Middle Welsh, I believe, Cedairn and Cadairn and stuff like in modern Welsh. So yeah.
But Yeah, that was Ynys Môn is called that because, well, has been called that because the leaders of the Kingdom of Gwynedd from the House of Aberfraw, or Aberfraw, is it?
Aberfraw, yeah.
Aberfraw. They had their court on the island. So they had one Aberfraw, which is the house, which is what the house is named after, and the other was at Rosyr, also known as Caerllys. So that's why Ynys Môn was known as Ynys Cedarn.
I think it's probably best to jump in here. I've also heard it pronounced as Aberfraw, just in case there's people out there. I call it Aberfraw. I've heard Aberfraw. So I'm just putting it out there.
I would naturally read it as Aberfraw, but I always, in my brain, my brain tricks me and makes me call it Aberfraw all the time, which is actually probably more anglicised than it should
probably,
be.
That one probably is, yeah. But I mean, but just in case there's people out there listening going, actually, it's Aberfraw. we've covered the base, okay?
Yeah. We've done it. Yeah, we've got it.
Definitely
we've got...
won't be a Tory because they've all switched off.
Yeah, weirdly, we've kicked them out already.
We've had a few Tories message saying, I like you even though we're Tories. And I was always a bit surprised at that because I can sometimes be a bit anti-Tory rhetoric. So there are some good eggs, apparently. But we're not getting into politics.
Hey, there's good people everywhere.
Keep saying you're not bringing it up. Keep going to it as well. Love it.
Yeah. Damn it.
Another one was something I think, Steve, you mentioned earlier. It's, it was known as Môn Mam Cymru. It was called that by Gerald of Wales. And that means in English, Mourn, Mother of Wales. Yeah. This is a reference to how fertile the land is on Anglesey. It used to be a bit of like the breadbasket of Wales.
Breadbasket, definitely, yeah.
That's it. Lots of abundance there. And that's also where he gets his other name, called Ynys Vale or the Honey Isle.
I have heard that now you say it.
Yeah, these things are like, I don't think they were called it hugely, but like they have been mentioned as these names, you know, through recorded history. So all in all, I think I counted this right when I did these notes, about 9 different names over the years, although I'm kind of cheating because I'm using names from different languages as well. But that's
I think that's all right.
It?
I mean, you could add a 10th there if you want to say something nice about the place or nasty about the place. Their whiskey's good. I'll give them that. But
go on, you say you've been wanting to do Morph Morn, haven't you?
No, I have not.
You've been itching for it, mate. That's why you wanted to do this whole episode. If I remember.
Have friends. Well played. I have friends on Ynys Môn. There is a term that people that apparently Mornians refer to themselves Morch Morn, Anglesey pigs, and I don't know whether it started as a derogatory term and they just sort of owned it. But that exists. I will say I don't use it. It exists.
I've heard, like, there is a tendency to believe that people on there are slightly different to mainlanders. And even in this BBC article I read about, the guy who wrote it was like, some people often say that we do tend to be a bit different and considered a bit haughty, which I didn't really know what that means. But they said, it doesn't help that we islanders call ourselves, or call Anglesey, Gwlad y Medra, which roughly translates as the can-do country. So, yeah. Like... They do sometimes feel... I mean, all islands do have their own collective.
I suppose they do, of course. They would.
Yeah, it's like a subculture, isn't it, most of the time when you get something like that.
Jack, did you mention the House of Aberfraw or Aber... however we want to
Yeah, so
to
they
call
had
it.
They had their court there, so like...
And how important that was for Llywelyn and like
huge.
Some notable Welsh rulers.
I mean, it's mentioned in the Mabinogi, isn't it? Isn't that where, on the way back... Obviously, Branwen, when she returned from Ireland, died on the journey of a broken heart, they say. But I'm sure she was on her way back to...
The wedding was held. The wedding was held there. That turned into the disastrous one. I think her original wedding was held there. But yeah, it's especially its connection to how close it is to Ireland.
That's something super old, isn't it? That's mentioned in fucking so far back.
I mean, it's bonk as well. I just to sort of allude back to mentioning these sites that I talked about earlier, and I think. You find these sites a lot of the time. You look at Stonehenge, there are barely any sort of dwellings around that area. You know, this was a place that was used and then left. But especially you look at Mourne and you look at the Isle of Man even, and you can find standing stones in people's gardens, mate. And it just shows that you know, people have lived in this spot continuously for 5,000 years, you know?
That's cool.
And
it's
you know, you can go to these places around the world. I've just come back from Menorca without trying to rub it in and trying to butcher my Catalan.
This is your
and
bloody BBC4
like
bloody brand
this,
from
that's
last
what
time, isn't
this,
it?
This is exactly what this is. I should have brought this up more. I was on Radio 4 once, boys. And I went to see this Navetta. It's a burial ground, but you only really find them in Menorca. And it was in the middle of nowhere. I got this random taxi. It cost me €16 one way. And this guy didn't even wait for me. He just went. So I had to ring another one and, mate, no hablo inglés. I was like, oh, great, this is brilliant. So I had to ring up another taxi. But to go and see that was incredible. There was nothing around it. But you look at Mourne, and like I say, the Isle of Man as well. We should do a pod on that. Oh, it's not Wales, is it?
We did Cornwall before, mate. You know,
yeah. Let's do Ennismanor. It's my favourite place in the world. We could definitely. People have lived there. People have laughed and cried there continuously for 4,000, 5,000 years. And that's what's cool about Anglesey. Perhaps maybe that's where a bit of the subculture derives from. That, you know, these people have had this, albeit broken connection or muffled connection to the past. They still have it, whereas we've sort of left that. We don't appreciate it as much as perhaps people do there. I'm just chucking it out there.
I can totally understand that. Is that, like, you know, like, I think you'd be hard pressed these days to find anyone who's of like a pure Celtic descent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone's bloody mixed in some way these days.
Sound like you're going on a fire.
I know what you're
going
to say then. You're going to say I'm going on a fire ride. You can't find a white person these days, man. Yeah, no, not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, like, even though I know for a fact, like, my granddad was a Yorkshireman, you know, so I know I'm not 100% Welsh or anything like that, but it's like I very much feel Welsh, feel Celtic. I feel a connection to, like, Celticness, if that makes sense.
Same here, mate, yeah.
And it's like, you know, I can totally understand that, even like you said, if you had that broken connection. I mean, the thing is, you shouldn't feel bad that there's a broken connection over the last 5,000 years. You know, what are the chances that you're going to have some direct line? It's never going to happen. So, like, as long as you have that sort of identity.
It's as if we're custodians in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you feel it and...
We always say that, don't we? We don't care,
you know?
No matter where you're from in the world. If you want to, if you feel you're part of something, then that's true to you, and that's all that matters. Mm. And if you
Correct.
Feel like Wales is your home, then it is your home. And
100%.
We have so many American listeners who might not have even been here, but they feel a strong enough connection to, you know, help support us by paying Patreon, things like that. They send us so many links. They send us things that I don't even know about Wales, and I'm meant to be, like, you know, I'm reading about it every week. And you can have strong connections without even being directly in somewhere, and it's just like, yeah, passed down to you from feeling.
Well, you can
to
certainly
feeling,
just or, there's that kind of stereotype where you hear about an Irish American or an Italian American, and they, you know, there hasn't been an Irish or an Italian person in their family, say, for like 10 generations, something like that. That's what we're getting now, is we're getting people talking to us, and they're like Welsh American, if you like, you know, from however many generations behind. But I don't feel like I want to go like, oh, you're not really Welsh, do you? You know what I mean? If you feel a connection to that sort of heritage, and, you know, you're interested in it and you want to listen, and
that's
especially
good enough for me,
if
mate.
You want to give us money on the Patreon, then I'm more than happy to back that. Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, I think if you feel a connection to that, you should absolutely explore it. And yeah.
I got some tidbits about Anglesey or Ennismore that I think... Steve, you'll like a little bit of this, or maybe actually you won't like it because it's you're a big football fan. You're a big football fan, as am I. And Ennismore. So I put it on a list here. So I want to point out Wales currently can't do what Ennismore could do. So 15 years ago, Ennismore's football team. Sorry, I said Ernest Morn could do, not Ernest Morn could do.
You said Ernest Mann as well, but it's let's get on with it.
Yeah, so let me rewrite my rather witty headline. Wales currently can't do what Ernest Morn could do. It was a bit of a tongue twister, apologies. 15 years ago, Ernest Morn's football team achieved one of their greatest ever results at International Island Games. So these are, you know about these, certainly they're like these biannual international multi-sport
Menorca
events.
take part in that as well. I went there last week.
Big bucks. It's all paying off. This sponsorship from the whiskey must be paying off pretty big. But people who don't know, they're like these international island games. So lots of islands. I'm not sure if it's like how far around the world it is, but it's places like Gibraltar, it's Ernest Morn, it's Mallorca.
Yeah, you've got the Åland Island, I think, in sort of off Sweden and things like that, and like say Menorca and Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that sort of, rather than, you know, places in the South Pacific, it's more like generally relatively close to each other. But yeah, so 15 years ago, Ernest Morn's football team, they were playing this multi-sports event, and in dramatic fashion, they produced three late goals to beat tournament favourites Gibraltar 3-1. However, when Gibraltar played Wales, I think it was like 2 months ago now,
We drew nil-nil.
And Gibraltar ended a 13-match losing streak where they'd scored no goals and conceded 50 goals. And when Wales played against 50. Them, we drew nil-nil in Portugal in the Algarve. This is one of our worst results in our history, but it's considered Gibraltar's like, who are just, they're ranked 203rd in the world and haven't really it's just to sing our praises to Ernest Morn. They haven't really done anything in leaps and bounds, but this small island could do more than what Wales did against Gibraltar.
They did. They wore Wales shirts for that as well, I think.
Did they?
So we're taking that as a win. They did. They did. Oh. That was their kit. Yeah. And they won it, yeah.
They also, the world-famous off-road vehicle and royal favourite, the Land Rover, that was invented on Ernest Morn. Farmer and engineer Morris Wilkes, along with his brother Spencer, built a prototype in 1947 called the Land Rover, and they never looked back, unless it was reversing, and they were looking back. Sorry.
God. When you wrote that, I bet you were so fucking proud, didn't you?
That was worse than the intro, that, mate.
Yes, I'm off the hook.
Can I also... there's another thing invented on Ernest Morn, which is the Easy Care breed of sheep. They're unique that they don't need any shearing. So every spring they'll send their woolly winter coats, they shed them themselves and then grow another one when it gets cold again. So it's less work on the farmer and less stress on the sheep.
Oh man, I've got so much time for that. That is someone like me who just cannot be asked to work and has gone, how do I make my life easier? I'll breed a sheep that sheds its own fur? No, wool, whatever it's called.
It's a little island of invention as well, our plucky Northern Isle.
Yeah, I like that.
Island we all love so much.
We do. Massive fans.
Does anyone have any final remarks on Ernest Morn?
The only thing I wanted to jump in with, boys, was that I did, I don't know whether I mentioned this last time, but my dissertation in the university was on sort of the language of the Northeast and the Welsh language in the Northeast. And it turns out that we don't say DDI for Thursday around here. We say it as Divye, which the S sound there is quite unique to Northeast Wales and parts of Southern Wales in their dialects. So it's a bit like when you'd say, if you say the plural for cadair chair, you'd say cadeiriai, whereas in sort of the northwest and parts of the southeast, you'd say cadeiria, and then in the northeast and parts of the southwest, then they'd say cadeiria. Apparently it was quite strong in the northeast to say divye with a v sound in there. In the northeast, but apparently they still say in Anglesey and parts of the mainland in that area as well, but mainly Ernest Morn, they will still say divya for Thursday. And I just thought, I'm going to have to get a link to Flintshire in there somehow. And they still say it. So if you ever hear someone say that they're going off somewhere on divya, they're just saying DDI. I had to get that in there, boys. That was the only reason I suggested Ernest Morn.
For your dissertation, what led you for that specific Because I didn't have to do a dissertation for mine. So what was your... how did you come to choose that?
I think... do you know what? My first... When I had a chat with my tutor in the university, it was very much... We were gonna do something on the Highland Clearances because I was into Gaelic culture quite a lot at the time.
Hmm.
And I just... I couldn't hone myself into it as much as I needed to, you know? Yeah. And it just... And I think because... When I learned Welsh, I felt very unique. Being in an area where no one spoke Welsh, the better I got at speaking Welsh, the more unique I felt. And then all of a sudden I'd go to university and there were people there using it socially that I'd never experienced before. And all of a sudden that uniqueness went, was traded out for something better. It was traded out for a sort of community feel, yeah. which was beautiful. So it wasn't as if, you know, I was sad to lose that. But at the same time, I sort of... I mean, I remember going to university on the first day and my dad's a season ticket holder at Liverpool. So I like to see them do well in football, but I'm not really a fan. But I think I had a Liverpool shirt on one of the first days I was down there. And I had my Wrexham and Wales and Celtic ones were in my bag. And I remember some scouts are coming up to me going, what part of Liverpool are you from, mate? And I went, I'm from Wrexham. And from that moment, I sort of went like, no, I'm, you know... Yes, I like to see Liverpool do well in football and things like that. Mm. But you know, I wanted to feel that connection, especially being far from home. You know, you've got this phrase in Welsh, "Gwell Cymru, Cymru di cartre." You know, the best Welsh people are those away from home that they seem to be more proud of where they're from. I was telling everyone I was from Wales in Menorca. I went there last week, boys, and. So I sort
you were pulling him apart when he goes, "Hey, have you heard of Ennismore?" And I'll tell you something now. Like, I got 30 minutes. Have you got?
Yeah. Have you got an hour and a half? Yeah. But it sort of brought me to that I wanted to sort of reconnect with something that brought that uniqueness back, you know. And do you know what? As I'm saying this, a bit of a off piece, I'm looking at I've had timetable, I make my own timetables for my lessons as a teacher, and it's got literally, I kid you not, I've had this for the past 14 years now. I'm looking across, it's got Dydd Llun, Dydd Mawrth, Dydd Mercher, Dyddiau, Dydd Gwener. Stick it in there because I'm so there you go. That was quite cool. It's literally to my left right now, but I just wanted to feel a bit more unique, and I sort of that's why I did it. And I found so many unique peculiarities, and it was where I really started appreciating dialect and sort of. Moving away from this desire that everybody has to have this perfect Welsh, that
Definitely.
You know, Welsh especially is this. It comes from this oral tradition that you know you see people spelling things incorrectly in Welsh, and you're thinking, no, who cares? If that's how you want to spell it that way.
Yeah, because, you cannot tell me that, especially when it was back in when. Britain was, you know, Brythonic and all that.
Exactly. There was no standardised language.
There was no, we all spoke whatever we did, our little dialects and our little corners. Well, yes, we could all understand each other. But if you were from the south of Wales and you spoke to someone that was up in the Hainogledd or whatever like that, you would be speaking different. You would be spelling things different. 100%. It's really not a big deal.
The moment we standardise it is the moment we start losing potentially... Yeah. Different ways of expressing ourselves, and
what was the one you said, mate, when you were on your last time? And it was Yardvacha Haf.
Yeah,
and you said there was there's a little tiny community somewhere.
Oh, not Yardvacha. Oh gosh, in Penant Malangell, Yardvach Malangell, instead of a squarnog for a hare.
That's right. It was a hare.
They call it Malanges Little Lamb. No, Oinvach Malanges it was. Of course it was, yes. Yeah. And, you know, the moment you say to them, actually, we want you to call it a squarnog or a skvarnog like the rest of us, that part of social history is gone. And that's why we have to protect these things. And, you know, I'm all for that. As well, so I think that's what brought me to to wanting to look into it. But that was the only thing I wanted to add, boys. Yeah, but hey, do you know what? I thought this might have been a car crash, but it's gone all right.
So, we think that every episode.
We've gone up now. We've gone up from there, haven't we? Yeah.
Well, every episode starts like this.
Well, it's saying on here 1 hour 17, but when people come to see this, it'll be down to an hour and they'll be wondering what 18 minutes of content.
I reckon we might cut a little bit out. So that probably, we often do this. We'll say, all right, we're at 44 minutes. But what time does it say?
What? It's on 32.
Yeah.
Yeah. Witchcraft is going on here?
Yeah, there might be some little bits chopped in and chopped out, but I think we've done pretty well to... I do think Ernest Moran is very special. I think it's. I do think as an island, it's very unique, and it's had so much history on there. So, yeah, even if
that's
I force it
had
upon
to
us
do this episode on. That's why Steve came in and said, we've got to do it. We've got to do it.
Lads, you've got to... People are going to start believing this. If they want to see that, I will screenshot and post on Instagram.
It's going to be two propaganda campaigns either side now on our socials. It's going to be like, he did it, and you're going to do the other thing.
This is literally awful. You're pulling the wool over everyone's eyes here, mate. You're pulling the Anglesey wall over everyone's eyes. The wool
luckily, it falls off.
These sheep. Yeah, thankfully it falls off, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's our Ernest Moran. But next time, if we're lucky to have you back on again, mate, we'd love to do...
it'd be my pleasure.
Where do we say
you can
was
pick
Ernest...
You can pick the subject next time, Steve.
Well, thank you.
Is it Ernest Manor? Is that the right one?
It'd have to be Ernest Manow for me.
Ernest Manow. Sorry, yeah. So I think that'd be
great history there. About, you know, even things like the Gaelic language there. When it was first written down, it was written down by a Welsh bishop. So it's the only one of the three Gaelic languages that it looks like it sounds like a mixture between Scottish and Irish Gaelic, but it looks like it's written in Welsh orthography. So it's beautiful. It's like this midpoint between all of the Celtic languages. So we have to do that.
Oh, love it. That's definitely a bit of a
sin. I've got a Celtic mythology book at the moment. I'm actually on the Manx.
Which book you're reading as well. Is it the Mammoth, not the Mammoth book of Celtic stories?
By Peter Beres Fidelis. Is that the one? Is it?
Oh, I love it. The
so
Manx
good.
Stories are
so,
cool
so
too.
Good.
And that means this whole episode was actually a timely precursor to the next one, then the next Ernest that we'll cover. Mm. Well,
you're only going to get me back on when you're doing islands, aren't you? We'll do the Isle of Wight at one point, Ernest Oyth.
Yeah, then Barry Island next. Well, thanks, mate. It's such a privilege and a pleasure to have you on. You are
always a pleasure having you, mate. We
think what you're doing for Cymru and the language, it's fantastic. Making it accessible is the most important thing, and you do that in abundance. And we can find you all over socials. Just type in Dr. Cymraeg, but as always, we'll put links to you in the.
Oh yeah, we should say, are you doing anything the moment you want to push people to?
Oh, of course.
On at this end of the episode, by all means.
Well, we know they probably voted Labour or Plaid, but
exactly.
I do. I've actually just released a book a couple of weeks ago called 88 Favourite Welsh Adjectives, and so thank you for letting me do this. But yeah, it's I've just chosen 88 random Welsh adjectives, and for each one, I go through an introduction about sort of how I learn the word and how it's used in language. I've got a bit of a thesaurus section. I go through the whole etymology back to sort of Proto-Indo-European. Oh, I've got example sentences and questions, show you how to use the comparatives and superlatives. So I've got that for every page. I've tried to put a bit of Dr. Cymraeg humour in there as well. So you can find it on the website that shares its name with a river and a rainforest in Southern America. And 88 favourite Welsh adjectives. That means a lot to me that you've let me do that, guys.
We'll put this at the very start. So what we'll do, we'll edit this round and we'll put that at the very start to make sure everyone who's
we'll some link some it people... on the old notes as well, mate.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll do a quick little editing. So that'll be the intro. Around there. It also took me far too long to realise you meant Amazon. I'm just too tired tonight. I was like, what? What an odd way to describe this place to find it. So in case there's anyone thick out there listening, you can find it on Amazon, but we'll put the links in the descriptions. And like I said, so anything else coming up? Amdraw, is that still available?
I think you can still watch Amdraw. I'd rather people didn't, but you can still
I've got
watch
it downloaded
it.
On my my Skybox.
Yeah. I saw you on what was the is the like Welsh sports thing, was it Pen and a Game,
yeah.
And when you were saying about, and I was like, man, I relate to this guy. I reckon I would relate to you anyway. When you said you met Ryan Reynolds, because obviously you were on Wrexham for a bit when I saw you on one of the episodes.
Yes, I haven't seen that episode, but a lot of people have sent me screenshots going, what are you doing in my living room? So,
I paused it, I pointed, and I said to my wife, I was like, that's Dr. Cymraeg, he's been on my podcast. And she was like, she didn't understand the significance, but I was like, right, you're done now. I'm gonna have to
it's because there is no significance, guys. It's literally just...
when you said on that, the Pen in the Game, you said you knew that Ryan Reynolds was a good looking boy, but when you saw him you were like, oh my god, I just can't believe how attractive he is. I know that I would be the same. I'd be doing googly eyes at him.
He was dreamy, boys.
I do think when you meet actual celebrities you realise, oh god, you're something else, aren't you, because they are just unbelievable.
You think, oh, it's the makeup, it's the lighting, it's all this sort of stuff, and then you look at them in person, you go, oh my, what a way to make me feel bad about myself.
You're just
better
than me.
I'm going to go home, look in the mirror and hate myself now.
That's exactly what I did, and I still do.
So HGH or Hoff and Soderiau Gymraeg.
That's exactly the one.
88 favourite Welsh. I've just lost it. A favourite 80. Oh, hang on, I got on here. It says 67 favourite Welsh verbs if you Google it. Is that your precursor?
That's the other one, isn't it?
If anybody wants to buy that one as well, they're welcome to do so.
Yeah, double bubble.
I didn't even bring that up. You brought that up.
Yeah. I tried to crowbar it in slightly smoother.
Cheers,
way.
Mate. I see what you did there. I like it.
And yeah, so like we said, we'll put this at the intro at the end and at the start, just so people who haven't made it all the way to the end can get two bites of the cherry. Diolch yn grand up, pub. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate you all, and we'll catch you all next week. Diolch yn fawr.
Ta-da.
As white sandy beaches are kissed by the tide, misty marshlands lay silently still. See rocky coves and the secrets they hide, with the headland as their windowsill. Where picturesque villages down country lanes gaze out over the estuary. Wander a while round a castle's remains and step back in history. Anglesey, treasure island, the Irish Sea, where the peaceful scenery welcomes you to Anglesey. Anglesey, treasure island, the Irish Sea.